Techno Progressivo. You are listening to Techno Progressivo on 101.9 CITR in Vancouver.
Welcome to Techno Progressivo. I'm DJ Waugh, and you're listening to 101.9 CITR in Vancouver. I have some great beats on tap, along with a feature interview from Calgary's small town DJs. I will get to that shortly, but first, let's check out this week's tracks of the week. Let's start things off with some California vibes. Nala teaming up with 30 Bird label boss Claude Von Stroke. This is Everything Is Burning.
Today.
Okay, a couple of nice tracks there to start off the show. Wrapping up with some German techno and an LA vocal, it's Ame and Karen with a new one called The Witness. Both of those can be had at your favorite online retailer. On to the feature for tonight's episode. I was fortunate to be able to interview Pete of Small Town DJs a few weeks back to chat about production, DJing, and the underground scene in Calgary. Full track list and a collection of Small Town DJs web links can be found at Techno Progressivo's Facebook page. Let's check out part one of the interview. Okay, this is DJ Wah speaking to Calgary-based DJ and producer Pete of Small Town DJs. They've been producing and DJing since the early 2000s. They are regulars of the Calgary club scene with a fondness and frequent appearances at the legendary Hi-Fi Club and loads of other stops all across Canada. Internationally, they've played some amazing venues such as Spy Bar in Chicago, Monkey Loft in Seattle, and Fabric in London. They featured on episode 46 of Claude Von Stroke's Dirty Bird podcast a few years back, and their tracks have been released on Box of Cats, Fool's Gold, and Night Bass Records. So it's my pleasure to be speaking to him. This is Pete from Small Town DJs. So to begin with, how would you define your sound?
Well, our sound is, it's a fun, bassy house sound. We've always been influenced by funk and soul and disco, and I think that that definitely informs the house that we make, and it always has. So it's, you know, we don't take ourselves super seriously, and I think that comes through in the music. We like to have fun with it.
Did either of you have any musical training when you were younger that helped you out as you got into producing?
Well, you know, my partner Mike, he plays guitar and dabbles in a couple other instruments, but myself, I basically was wanting to be a DJ from the time I was a kid. So I started DJing at hall parties in high school and never looked back.
What was it about growing up in Alberta, or was there anything about growing up in Alberta that actually inspired you, or did you have to look for other sources for that inspiration?
You know, Calgary's a great town. Alberta is like a tale of two provinces, really. There's you know, my Calgary and Edmonton friends are super into the arts and super liberal. And when I was growing up, a lot of my friends were into that stuff. And I know Mike was the same. He, you know, he got into graffiti at a young age, and we used to go check out the trains that he would paint back in the late 80s. You know, so there was some stuff happening here. There was a big skateboard scene, and that was there was a real crossover with the skateboard scene and the rave scene in those early days. And so, you know, it all felt like one kind of group of kids that were all into that, had that similar interest. And so, yeah, it's like eventually I moved out to Ontario, and that played a big influence in musically for me, because I got to see a bunch of the guys from Chicago and Detroit and Toronto as they would go back and forth between those cities. So that was my other big influence. But, you know, in Calgary, there was a couple guys doing it. DJ Rice, also a guy called Colin Hart, who had early releases on Aquarius and with John Aquaviva, who was operating out in Ontario. And there was some connection between those guys and the Calgary crew. So yeah, it was a very small scene, but there was definitely some stuff going on back in the prehistoric age in Calgary.
What was the experience like of trying to build up your reputation and establish yourself as a DJ and producer in Calgary?
I mean, it was probably the same as any other city. Like, we tried to play, you know, back then when your music collection and your record collection was your identity as a DJ oftentimes, you know, we tried to bring our own sound, and the genres were quite, like, independent of each other. So you'd have somebody playing deep house or somebody playing jazzy house or somebody playing hip hop or somebody playing, you know, a rock night, and there wasn't a lot of crossover between those sounds with most DJs. And so that was one thing that we did from the start, was throwing all our influences in and throwing all our, which it sounds kind of quaint now, but at the time it was a little bit more rare to throw a bunch of different sounds into a set. So we would play, you know, I met up with Mike, and we had a very similar taste, and we would play everything from like Armin van Helden and early Green Velvet and records and stuff like that in with, you know, rap sounds that were coming out at the time, and classic funk records, and just try to build it all into one cohesive set.
And then with all of that coming together, was there a time or a moment or a period of time when you realized that this wasn't just a hobby or an interest or a hope anymore, and was actually a career? And what was that like?
Well, there definitely was a time like that, but I was pushing for that from like such an early age. It was all I cared about. I went to, you know, I was a middle student, mediocre student. I went to university. I had terrible grades in university, but the whole time I was there, I was getting a big music education, and, you know, it was such a huge focus for me the whole time. We started doing events and DJing and promoting events, and we got Pro Tools, and we were trying to produce early as well. And, you know, people supported us from the early days. So that was what enabled me to think that I was going to be able to do it for a job. I had the money that I would make in a shoebox under my bed when I lived with my parents. And I was collecting a bunch of money in this shoebox, and I was like, "Whoa, this is cool, man! I'm DJing, and the money's built backing up in this box." So then, eventually in 2001, I was still working a day job, and in 2001, I made the decision to quit and just do music full time and hustle to make that work, and I've been doing it ever since. So it's going on 20 years now. Let's beside each other. 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 Beside each other.
So you did mention using Pro Tools. Is that still the DAW that you use, or do you use something else now when you're producing?
Well, you know, I don't know why we ever got away from Pro Tools. I think because, well, you know, Mike's always been a big Apple guy, and so Logic, as it started to become more popular, I think was a natural transition for Mike, because of just the workflow on Apple product was good. And for me, you know, Ableton was, you know, just the ease of use became, and you know, it's like a video game, and I liked it from the first time I tried it.
So within both Logic and Ableton, do you use most of the inbox VSTs, or do you have a lot of external stuff that you like to use as well?
Mostly inbox, yeah. Mostly software synths and stuff like that. We used to toy around with some hardware stuff back in the day, but it's just like, it was harder to use, and it was, and there's a reason why. Like, man, I look back on some of the songs that came out back in, you know, in the 90s and whatnot, and listening to records like, you know, Homework by Daft Punk, and just how difficult it was to produce at that time with the really short clips and samples, and trying to make something sound good on a really within the limitations of the gear that they were using, and it blows my mind even more at how talented those, like a guy like Todd Edwards, like what a genius that guy is to be able to have created and kicked off like an entire genre basically, you know, with that gear. Whereas, you know, now it's like the possibilities are endless. So maybe there's something to that. Maybe the limitations in the gear were what assisted them in creating that great art. But it sure was harder to produce back then than it is now.
Producing, what element of production did you find most difficult?
Well, I think like the sonics, the mastering and the elements like that, like getting the frequencies right, because I've always been more of an ideas guy. Mike's better on the technical side, but you know, both of us came from DJing into production, which is the root it's kind of the opposite route that a lot of guys are taking these days. One time we were playing at Fabric in London in like 2008, and we looked on the flyer, and they do a 1 month flyer for Fabric, and we were one of the only acts on the whole month that wasn't known for their production first. And so then that was kind of like an impetus to work harder on it and to keep pushing on that, because prior to that we were doing a lot of real basic stuff, a lot of mashups and things that were, it was almost like we were DJing inside the DAW, you know, where it's like a cut and paste style, which is how a lot of guys were doing it back in the earlier days, like guys like Cold Cut and, you know, Shadow and the guys that were our influences, you know, that was how they were producing.
So let's take a look at the live performance side of things then. When you are performing live, do you guys use CDJs, Traktor, Serato, Ableton, or some other source?
We use CDJs, and, you know, we're not the guys who are just, you know, downloading the tracks and then playing them on CDJs. We'll trick them out and kind of create our own sets with a little bit more detail than just... And just ripping the audio and playing it on CDJs. There's always like, I think going back to when we used to play on four turntables back in the day. You know, these days we'll edit songs to incorporate different sounds and layers. You know, in a similar way to that we used to with turntables.
Set, do you have a rough idea of how the songs are going to go, or do you just kind of edit everything on the fly and kind of see where the night goes?
No, we edit things ahead of time, so it allows us to kind of bounce around a little bit more, and then we'll have little sections put together and kind of bounce from section to section, and it works well for us, because when you've got two guys, it's like, I mean, we've been playing together for so long that we're pretty like simpatico the whole time that we're DJing together, but the way that we play, we like to be able to bounce around based on what's happening in the crowd. So it's like, so we'll prepare things ahead of time, and then we'll have an idea of where we're gonna go, and then be able to switch it up on the fly if we need to.
Thanks. Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke you every day. Pick up a copy around Vancouver or fuck with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theatre, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theatre, visit their website at www.riotheatre.ca.
I'm DJ Wah, the show is Techno Progressivo, the station is 101.9 CITR in Vancouver, and we are halfway through an interview and track retrospective with Calgary's small town DJs. Full track listing and a collection of small town DJs' web links can be found at Techno Progressivo's Facebook page. On to part two of the interview. You did mention using four vinyl turntables in the past. Do you guys go with four CDJs now?
No. We're always just on two. Okay. I mean, you know, the four CDJ thing is cool. The technology is so, like, precise that I don't necessarily see the difference between playing an acapella on the third turntable over top of, like, a mix or something versus, like, doing it ahead of time in Ableton and then playing them together on two decks, you know what I mean? I mean, it's okay, but, I mean, for us, going onto CDJs was already a big enough step. Like away from how we started. And that being said, during pandemic, I messed around with vinyl again for the first time in a long time, and I still have my vinyl collection, and it was a blast. I was able to get back into it, the feeling that I had when I started DJing, and you know, there's nothing like it. It's totally different than playing on CDJs.
Over your career, are there any countries or specific clubs or events that you've absolutely loved to play at or hope to play at again sometime when COVID isn't a factor in everything?
Oh man, there's too many to count. Lollapalooza, we played the very first time they did a DJ stage at Lollapalooza in 2008. We played, and it felt like really groundbreaking because it was a rock fest, and then the first time they had DJs was we got to play that year, and that was so epic. And you know, now it's a huge part of the festival, but So that was cool. And after we played, they liked our set, so they asked us to stay and play the after party for all the bands and staff. And it was on site behind the main stage, and it was so crazy. Like, we played with DJ Am. He had meticulously prepared a set that with all music from the bands that were playing at the festival, and like, it was just a crazy experience. And there was a bunch of like, you know, actors and actresses there, and like, you know, like, it was just, it was wild. And so that was a really cool experience. Playing Fabric in London, obviously, it's such a legendary spot that we did that twice so far, and we'd love to go back there. Playing, obviously, at Shambhala is, and Base Coast in Canada, it's like the hometown favorites. Like, Base Coast is just like, we feel really at home there, and we've had some of our favorite sets ever at Base Coast. Also, we usually play in Nicaragua on New Year's Eve on the beach, and that's like an incredible way to ring in the new year each year. We've done that maybe like 7 or 8 times. Hi-Fi Club is, you know, now we've shut that down, but it was a great place to play, and we were able to do a lot there as our home base. We, you know, the crowd was always really receptive and really open to whatever we wanted to play, so that was great.
One or two tracks, and this is probably going to be difficult, but one or two tracks that you've produced that you're most proud of producing, and why?
A couple that come to mind would be Bad Behavior, the one we did with Dances with White Girls and Ski Tour. That one just has like, it just has this energy, like, and Dances is unbelievable. That guy's, he's one of the most talented MCs that I've ever heard. He's like, he's super clever. He's just got such a crazy style. So just working with him was really cool. And he also made that song like feel like a hit. And so it still feels like a hit to me. I feel like when I hear it, I'm like, you know, this is a song that could get played in a DJ set by, you know, in a commercial club or in a super underground rave. And I feel like that's a really hard thing to do. And so I really like that. For that reason, also Erase the Night, I really love. That was a song we did with Lisa Lobsinger from Broken Social Scene. It was a collaboration with Oliver, who's one of my favorite producers. But because of his record label, he wasn't, even though he's on the production credits, he wasn't able to put his name on the as a collaboration credit. But that was a Oliver collaboration. And Lisa is just so incredible. She's such a talent. I'd say that one too. And you know, it's like, I feel like when you can collaborate with somebody on vocals that you really love and you can turn out a song that you feel really excited about, I think, you know, you're doing that person justice. I love that, because it's like, you know, it's not an easy thing to do, and when it works, it feels really, really great. Hope that the night light save us.
Already, but I just want to see as well, are there any producers or DJs whom you really admire and why?
I'm obsessed with our scene and with the music scene. I mean, that's why I've dedicated my whole life to it, and it's like, it's just a total obsession of me since I was a kid. You know, I love all styles of music, and you know, there's DJs that I love. Right now, a guy I really like is Melee. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but from the UK. He's a house guy from over there. He's one of my favorites. I love D Mike B from LA. He's like one of the most versatile DJs on the planet. He can play like the best rap set you've ever heard, and then just like craziest like OG house set, you know. Another guy, DJ Sneak, is like, he's become a friend in recent years, and that guy is like such an like all-time legend. Whenever he plays, I'm always like just obsessed with the records that he's pulling out.
What's your poison? What's your demon, techno? What's your poison, disco? What's your king, house? What's your passion, disco? What's your demon, techno? What's your poison?
What is your vision for the future of yourself, production-wise and in DJing?
You know, we've been at it for a long time, but we're both still really excited about it, which is feels good. Like, I never anticipated that when I was younger, that it would be, that I'd be so obsessed with it for so long. But it's like, you know, we still love doing it. We just want to keep exploring new sounds and playing new sounds. That's the thing about us as DJs, is that we love new music. And so we're always trying to push forward with new stuff that we haven't had a chance to play before. So, you know, that's going to remain a focus. And then putting our music out, it feels like the music is getting more and more how we want it to sound, which is, I think, every producer's goal.
Let me see your booty swing. Then give me that booty tang. Nasal drip. Just break it down and then you strip. Hey! To be hypnotic, transphonic, mobilistic, super fantastic, funk and quiet all the time. Hippo friends of mine, I'm a midnight funk, baby. That's what I am. That's what I am.
Exciting releases lined up. We just had one come out on Friday on Box of Cats called Nobody, and then we've got one coming out on Rules Don't Apply next month that we're excited about, and then we've got one coming out on Holy Moly in January that we're also very excited about. So yeah, we've got it, we've got the releases stacked, and we're like, you know, we're just we're always trying to have some new experiences and play some new events that we haven't done before, and it's like, it's all good.
fire.
Pete of Small Town DJs. A selection of Small Town DJ tracks can be found on Beatport, Apple Music, and Juno Download, and a full list of Small Town DJs web links can also be found on the Techno Progressivo Facebook page. So thank you very much for doing this.
I guess I didn't know the ledge.
Transcendence. Transcendence. I call it transcendence.
Psytrance, hard trance, epic trance, acid trance, deep trance, hard dance, breakbeat. Every Sunday at 10 p.m. to midnight. Hosted by DJ Smiley Mike and DJ Caddyshack.
We are all done for another episode of Techno Progressivo. Thank you so much to Small Town Pete of Small Town DJs for agreeing to do this. I'd encourage you to head over to Techno Progressivo's Facebook page to check out the track list, along with a collection of Small Town DJs web links, and learn more about them and the music that they make. So, what are you waiting for? If you've enjoyed the show and want to check it out again, you can go to Apple Podcasts or CITR.ca under the Techno Progressivo show page for this episode, along with other great interviews and mixes from the past. Up next is Transcendence with DJ Smiley Mike. Join him on a two-hour ride through the world of trance. Before we go, though, let's set the controls in the time machine for this episode's track from the past. For this one, we'll hop back 30 years in time to 1991. This is an absolute belter from the KLF album The White Room. This is Last Train to Transcentral. Enjoy this, and I'll see you back here in 2 weeks.